Every woman deserves to know all the information so she can make an informed choice about the abortion.
Well, thank you guys all for coming. This is awesome. We're super excited to have Anne on this month. And we are at 12 o'clock. So we will, if you have questions, you can put them in the, drop them in the chat, and we'll make sure that Anne sees them and we can answer them along the way. And I'll kind of keep an eye on that for you.
There we go. I can see you guys.
Well, welcome, everybody.
All right. So, well, welcome, everybody, to Webinar Wednesday. This will also be shared on the Pro-Life Team podcast. So Anne O'Connor with NIFLA, she's the vice president at NIFLA, working side by side with Tom Glessner. They have been working to protect pregnancy clinics for, I would guess, 35 years, but I'm just guessing. And I know that they've gone to the Supreme Court with NIFLA versus Becerra, protecting freedom of speech, and won that fight. Mm-hmm. And we looked to NIFLA for what not to do, what to do, to strengthen legal decisions that have legal consequences. And so, Anne, I'm glad you're here. That was my off-the-cuff intro. And so...
thank you, Jacob.
Yeah, thank you for being here.
Well, and NIFLA really appreciates iRapture. Like, when there's like a really technical issue about websites or something, Jacob's our go-to person because it's kind of above our heads. So we appreciate iRapture so much and for all that you do for centers. And I'm so happy to see all of you here. I recognize a lot of people, and it's nice to see you from all across the country. And today I was going to share a little bit about some cases that are going on I want to make sure you know about. Then I want to talk about advertising issues, since that's what you do with iRapture. And then we'll touch a little bit on being why we want you to be religious organizations, and a little bit on HIPAA. If that's okay. We'll save questions till the end, but please type them in there. And then Sandy will show me how to read them or help me read them. All right. So welcome. Yes, as Jacob said, I've worked at NIFLA for about 30 years now. And it has been such a ride. We have 1,800 pregnancy centers that are members of NIFLA. And NIFLA was formed to help pregnancy centers withstand the attacks, because we were getting attacked back then and we're still getting attacked like crazy now. And we provide best practices in the legal world and in the medical world as well. That's our focus. So a couple cases that we have coming up, there's like 20 cases going on across the country involving pregnancy centers. And we keep up to date on them. We write a monthly memo on them. We're plaintiff in about 6 or 7 of them right now. And some of the important ones are out of California and New York, where the Attorney General has gone after pregnancy centers. And I see some New York people here for advertising abortion pill reversal, saying that it's false and misleading advertisement. So the attorney generals have gone after them in state court. So NIFLA, represented by ADF, filed federal actions saying, hey, you're violating our constitutional rights by prohibiting us from speaking about this. And we won in New York and we lost in California. The New York one was appealed, and that was the appeal was argued in June, and we're waiting for the decision on that. But right now there's an injunction in place saying the attorney general can't go after pregnancy centers for advertising the APR. In California, we lost and we appealed it, and we have arguments October 9th. If you could remember to pray 9:30 Pacific time in the morning for us and for our ADF attorneys. We really feel like we have a good case, but it's hard in California. And the Ninth Circuit is a little better. So we're hoping to get a good decision out of them. So those are two really big cases going on. But the other big one that NIFLA's not a party in is the First Choice case out of New Jersey. And I am from New Jersey. This center is a wonderful center up in northern Jersey. And the attorney general has gone after them with an investigative subpoena, not based on any complaints against the center, asking for tons of information about their advertisement, websites and mailers and things like that, which the center, represented by ADF, has been complying with, except for the final request, which was, we want a list of all your donors and their contact information, because we want to contact them and see if they were misled into believing that you were a reproductive health organization and that's why they donated to you. And so what they decided was that that crosses the line. We have nothing to hide, right? None of you have anything to hide, but you have a lot to protect. So it's been bouncing back and forth between state and federal court here. Finally, the Supreme Court took it. So in December, pregnancy centers will be back before the Supreme Court. And we have a great record. Jacob mentioned the NIFLA versus Becerra case that we won back in 2018. That case has been cited more than 200 times since then to protect the First Amendment. And we see it as a basis for the First Choice case as well. So we're hoping for victory again, but it's so cool to be back before the Supreme Court. And thank God for the courts, where we can find justice, even if there's political action against us. So if you'd like to know more about our cases, you can reach out to us. We have one in Delaware, Illinois. Many of you are from these states. We have one in Minnesota, which we just lost, but we're appealing it. We had a case in Vermont, which we had to, what happened is they passed the law saying pregnancy centers are misleading and fraudulent in their advertising. And if they do, we can go after them. And there could be a private cause of action, meaning anybody, all the pro boards could come and sue the center. And we fought that. ADF represented us. We fought that on behalf of our 8 pregnancy centers up in Vermont, saying, "What? You don't have any proof that we're misleading or fraudulent. You're actually, the attorney general actually said, oh, no, it's not these 8 centers. They're all doing things well. It's if bad centers come to our state." And but we had a case because they specifically targeted us because of our viewpoint, our pro-life religious viewpoint. So we had a great case, and we won a motion the state brought a motion to dismiss. We beat them there. And so the state got scared. And they went in and amended that law. So it didn't target pregnancy centers anymore. So kind of gutted our case. They still could go after pregnancy centers, and we're watching that. But that's the kind of thing we're dealing with in Delaware. Delaware passed a law very similar, and the state agreed not to enforce the law while the litigation is pending. So it's a lot of things going on like that. And thankful for groups like ADF, Thomas More, ACLJ. They're all involved in pregnancy center protection, and we're so thankful for them. But besides the cases that I wanted to make sure you knew about, we have some advertising things I would like to talk to you about. Uh-oh, there's an echo when I'm talking. Do you hear it, Jacob and Sandy? No, okay. I'll just keep talking and hopefully it will fix. So you can bet your pro-abortion enemies are scouring your websites, right? And when we do legal audits, we go in and look at your websites and really make sure from an objective point of view, there's nothing that someone could claim is misleading or fraudulent or deceptive in your advertising. And it's a balance, right? Because you're trying to attract your target audience, you know, who is a woman not sure what she's going to do or looking for an abortion. You're trying to offer her last minute chances of hope and change of mind. And so like any business, like any ministry, you're trying to reach a group of people that your mission is to serve. So we can do that without also crossing the line. And, you know, Google has tried to hurt us by making us put little disclaimers on. It's all started years ago when we didn't even have Google and we just had Yellow Pages. If anybody remembers that, there was one division called abortion. And so we were advertising in that with abortion clinics, but then there's a big uproar. So then they made abortion alternatives and abortion. So abortion alternatives came first. And so we caught, you know, that kind of backfired on them because if we place an ad, they would see us before they would see the abortion clinics. So it's been a fight for decades. They have the same battle cry against us, but we want to make sure your advertisement will not draw any kind of controversy. So the kind of things we want you to be aware of and what we look for when we do a legal audit of your website is, what kind of wording are you using? First of all, do you have a disclaimer somewhere on there and maybe in multiple places that say you don't perform or refer for abortion? We really recommend that you have that. It's not a legal requirement that you have that, but it helps to fight the claim that we're misleading if right on our website, even if it's at the bottom or in the About Us page, it says we don't perform or refer for abortion. And you can say it in a nice way. You can say what you do provide and what you don't provide. But then we can say the consumer should be aware because it's right there on our website. We like to see a disclaimer that says all the information on your website, even the medical information, is just for general information purposes and doesn't replace the consumer seeing a physician, right? So that just, you know, you'll see that on any kind, you know, vitamin websites have that. So that's just good practice. We also like to see a website privacy and terms of use. So it tells the consumer, if you gather information just by them visiting your website and what you do with it. So we really, some states require it. And I know iRapture can help make sure that that gets on your website. That is different than your patient privacy policy. Okay, we're going to talk about that in a minute. This is your website privacy policy. What kind of cookies you have and, you know, what you do with that information, how it's stored, who you share it with, if you share it with anybody. That would be in the website privacy and terms of use policy. We also look at your language about what services you offer. Are you saying things like, it was popular for a while, pre-abortion consultation or pre-termination consultation, words like that, that made it sound like, oh, if a woman's thinking about an abortion, she can come to us and we'll consult with her about it before we do it. Just like, you know, if you were having knee surgery, you would talk to the doctor and do a whole consent. You'd have a whole pre-surgery consultation before you had the surgery. So doctors see that as a continuum, that the pre-abortion consultation leads to the abortion. Of course, we had it there because every woman deserves to know all the information so she can make an informed choice about the abortion. So NIFLA wrote a legal tips on this. If you're going to advertise anything like that, pre-abortion consultation, pre-abortion assessment, make sure in the context of that piece of advertisement, it says what it includes and what it doesn't include. Pregnancy test, ultrasound to confirm an intrauterine pregnancy, a nurse consultation does not include an abortion or a referral abortion. It has to say in the context, because if it's way down at the bottom of your webpage, someone could argue, ooh, that's a little misleading, right? Then the other thing I've been seeing on websites that's a concern is come to us so we rule out an ectopic. We really don't like to see that language because it is near impossible to rule out an ectopic, right? We're doing the ultrasound to see if the fetus is in the womb where it's supposed to be. So language like that to, you know, and I have some samples if you need it, and I'll send it to you, Jacob, so you have it for the future. But language like an ultrasound is a helpful tool to determine that the pregnancy is intrauterine or in the uterus. If not, it could be an ectopic. So if we don't see a pregnancy in the uterus, it's considered a pregnancy of unknown location, a PUL, a PUL, we call it. So if we can't see the pregnancy and she tested positive and she's certain amount of weeks along, we don't see it where we expect to see it, then it's in an unknown location. It could be an ectopic. It could be she miscarried. It could be she's just earlier than she thought. But we haven't confirmed where the pregnancy is. And so we suspect an ectopic. We give her ectopic and miscarriage precautions. We refer her to a physician, tell her to go to the emergency room if she has any complications, any symptoms at all. But to rule out an ectopic, they're going to do multiple ultrasounds. They're going to do serial HCG testing, which maybe some centers will grow to do. But it is very risky because we're seeing women early on in their pregnancy and ectopics are on the rise for some reason. We're seeing more and more ectopics. Audrey Stout, who is an RDMS with Soundview Imaging and has been doing it 25 years, she says in the last 2 years, she's seen more ectopics than all 20 years before. So ectopics are on the rise. And because we're seeing women early on, it is a risk. So do not advertise we can rule out an ectopic. Something like 35% of patients have an ectopic and it's never seen. It's like really hard to see on a video, on the ultrasound machine. So you can say things like, what your ultrasound is meant to do. There's some really good language I've seen on some centers. You can say an ectopic is a serious condition where the embryo implants outside the uterus. It can be life-saving. An ultrasound will determine if the embryo is in uterus where it's supposed to be. And if it's not, then you will be referred for appropriate care for an ectopic or miscarriage, right? To look for an ectopic or miscarriage. So there's ways to still talk about ectopics, but don't say rule out ectopic. Let's see, other things, APR. If you're advertising abortion pill reversal, and we recommend that you do, you want to also include that it's not 100% foolproof, right? It's like 64 to 68% successful to turn around. So I've seen some websites that say, oh, we can reverse your abortion if you took the abortion pill. What we might not be able to. So put in some kind of statistics and even cite where you got the statistics from, just to clarify with the patient. And let's see, what else do we like to see? Oh, any medical facts that you put on your website, we like to see citations too. So if you say 20% of pregnancies end in miscarriage, you should cite to something. It's really nice to cite to like Mayo Clinic and those kind of places. Everyone accepts that. Okay. And then one big thing is if you have an appointment page on your website where she can make an appointment or at least put information in, then you contact her. I see centers asking for way too much information on those appointment pages. First name, last name, date of birth, last menstrual period. Are you seeking an abortion? What's your email? What's your cell phone? Lots of what we call PHI, private information, all being collected on your website, somehow being transferred to you, hopefully in a secure manner. So unless someone can convince me it's absolutely necessary, we have all that information right up front, I would prefer first name, phone number. And you call her or text her. If you're going to be texting her, you should have a little language that says she gives you permission to text her, even though it might not be 100% secure. It's called safe harbor language, where you give her a warning about it, that it might not be 100% secure. Everything's confidential on your side, but you can't control her side, right? So I would gather the least amount of information that's necessary for you then to follow up and make the appointment. All right. Unless your website is, you know, you are totally secure and the web designer says, absolutely, we can do this, meets all the HIPAA requirements, I would not collect all that information up front. I just see the pro boards having a field day with that. They just had a huge claim against a major medical provider because the medical provider's website was gathering that kind of information in the background and then sharing it with Facebook, right? So that these are where claims can start happening. So just take the minimal amount of information that you need. And then finally, I want to talk to you about HIPAA and the Notice of Privacy Practices. This is how I know the pro boards are scouring your email, your websites, because they have a whole chart of the names of the centers and if they have a privacy policy and what they do. And, you know, they've done their research. And, you know, hopefully all of you know, unless you're billing electronically or for some reason communicating with health plans, you are not technically a HIPAA-covered entity. So you aren't under the jurisdiction of HIPAA. It doesn't mean we shouldn't be keeping all our patient information private along the guidelines of HIPAA, right? So NIFLA has always said, you know, you're not a covered entity. You're probably not. Very few centers are billing. You're probably not a covered entity, but you still want to follow these industry standards like HIPAA requires. And of course, many of you know Missy from Learning is Created. She has HIPAA training. She has patient privacy training. She's helped us so much. We've consulted with other HIPAA experts, and we feel really confident in our latest patient privacy policies that NIFLA produced in April. So if you're a NIFLA member and you didn't get that, email me because I'll send them over to you. It replaces our HIPAA section in our manual because we were using the term HIPAA because that's standard in the industry. Our big joke was to get everybody to spell HIPAA properly. And I think I probably just about got everybody to spell it H-I-P-A-A instead of H-I-P-P-A. But now we don't want to hold ourselves out at all to the public as HIPAA-covered entities, because that could be misleading to the consumer, right? So we don't want to see anything on your website that says all our forms are HIPAA compliant. Or if you have a complaint, contact the HIPAA office at HHS to file a complaint. Because none of that, you know, that sounds like we're holding ourselves out as a HIPAA-covered entity when we're not. We had some pro boards write like 10 attorney generals saying, oh, pregnancy centers are being deceptive. They're saying their notice of privacy practices is saying they can make a complaint to HHS when they're not under the jurisdiction. And a few of the attorney generals responded by contacting our centers. All of those things have been worked out. We have since changed the privacy notice so that it applies completely to us. We're not just using HHS's template. So please, if you check on your website, if you're using the old one, and contact us and I'll send you the new one. Okay. There's no requirement that you post it on the website. It's a service to your patients to tell them how you protect their information, how you use their information. But the number one rule to protect you is you don't release a patient's health records unless you have a signed authorization. That is your golden ticket. If she signs an authorization and says, share it with so-and-so, you have her permission. So anytime there's a request that comes in, even if it's a subpoena, if it's a police officer, if it's a mother, say, oh, I'm sorry, for privacy purposes, we need a signed authorization by the patient. And if you can get one, then you have her permission and there's no problem. Now, there are exceptions in the law, but your first reaction should always be, hold off. I get calls at least once a week. I had one today from a center who's getting a request for records from an attorney, has a signed authorization, but now it's electronically signed, right? because everything's on DocuSign or whatever. So we can't compare the signatures, but everything else matched. The name, the address, her date of birth. When in doubt, you could call the client and say, hey, did you want us to send this over? We got this packet of information. But always, if you don't have an authorization, always consult with an attorney and feel free to call us at NIFLA and we'll help you sort through. Because the last thing you want to do is wrongfully give someone's health record to someone when they didn't want it, right? So even though we're not HIPAA covered entities, there's state laws that might apply to you. And also there's contractual, like you've said, everything is going to be confidential. We are a safe and confidential place. Your medical director, your medical people working there, they have an ethical duty to keep things private with their patients. So there's plenty of other areas that would require us to be, to protect our patient privacy, in addition to HIPAA. All right. Client stories. If you're going to be posting client stories in your letters or on your website, make sure you have a signed authorization from them to do that. I get calls from centers all the time like, oh, well, if we just leave out a lot of the details, can't we do that? I always say, if she could read it and think it's her, don't publish it without her signature, right? Some centers put together a compilation of the typical client, and there's absolutely no identifying information, not even like towns or the month that she was pregnant when she came to us. Maybe, but it's always better to have an authorization. If you're going to use her ultrasound image, that's her medical record. You need an authorization for you to use that. Okay. So be careful about that. And then finally, a little bit about advertising is negative reviews. The pro boards sometimes have a field day writing negative reviews on Google, on Facebook, on Yelp. And so some of those platforms, you can disable reviews, which, you know, maybe you want to, especially if you're under attack. But in places that aren't, where you aren't able to disable it, you want to always answer both positive and negative reviews. The positive ones, you just say, thank you so much for the positive review. The negative one, you're not going to answer this way. You're not going to say, you weren't even a client here. Oh, you came to us, but you blah, 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 and complained about them. No, patient privacy, right? You cover it. You're writing not for the person who complained, but for the new reader who's reading Yelp and wondering if she should come to you, right? That's how we look. When I look at a restaurant or anywhere, if there's a negative one, I'll look and see how it was responded to. And I'll also compare it to all the positive ones and think, oh, that person's just a wacko, you know? So same thing, you want to write a response saying something like, oh, you know, that, are you sure you came to our center? Because that does not sound like how we operate at all. This is what we do. And we're a safe place. And 99% of our clients file with us a customer satisfaction survey with high results, better than Chick-fil-A even. Nah, you don't want to go that far. But you know what I'm saying? You're doing it for the future reader, not for this bum who wrote a fake review of you. So be prepared for that. We do have a legal tips that provides some sample language that you could use as well. And finally, I want to talk about being religious. I think most pregnancy centers have gotten this message now that the best way to protect our ministries, you know, with constitutional protections, with employment rights, is to make sure our ministries are religious organizations. And I know many of you formed your centers years and years ago. And the advice back then was don't be religious, right? Because we wanted to be able to get grants and we didn't want it to hinder us, even though we were motivated by our faith to go into this mission, right? But now with all the cases going up against Christian ministries and employment areas, and, you know, the poor cake bakers another cake baker is going up to the Supreme Court this year because she, you know, she, it's a matter of her expression and she wants to be able to make cakes that will honor her faith. We have cases where employees at Christian ministries or their applicants actually, and they can't sign a statement of faith and code of Christian conduct. So then they sue the ministry saying they're being discriminated against. That's happening a lot. It hasn't happened against a pregnancy center yet. So your defense is that you're a religious organization. And not just that you think you're a religious organization, that's documented in your articles, in your bylaws, that you have a statement of faith, a code of Christian conduct that everybody from your board down has to sign and renew every year. Because what happened, there was a big case in 2011 against World Vision. World Vision required their employees to sign a statement of faith every year. And, you know, they're an international employer, probably thousands of employees. And 1 year after 10 years of working there, these three people would not re-sign the statement of faith. They said they no longer believed in the Trinity. And so right on the spot, World Vision said, well, it's a condition of continued employment. So if you're not going to sign it, we're going to have to terminate you. They got terminated and they sued World Vision, saying that's discriminating against us based on religion. And it went all the way up to the Ninth Circuit, where we're going to be in October in our APR case. And the court ruled in favor of World Vision. It looked at its articles, its bylaws, its job descriptions, its mission statement, its statement of faith, code of Christian conduct, its employment practices. The whole bundle it looked at and said, no, even though World Vision isn't a church, it is a Christian ministry and it can hire people that believe the same as them. So that was a big win. And so we want to make sure you have that kind of protection. So if you're unsure if you're religious or you just assume you are because you know, that's what motivates you, do a legal audit because we'll look at your articles, your bylaws. Your job description should have not just religious qualifications. I see a lot that say, oh, you know, goes to a church, believes in the Trinity and those kind of things. But you have to have religious duties as well, meaning their job is part of furthering the religious mission of the organization. They are able to pray with clients as appropriate. They're able to share the gospel as appropriate. They lead devotions for staff on a regular basis. Things like that. Things that further the religious mission of the organization. And we have sample language for you as well on our website. You can go download the job descriptions that go through all those. So those are the things I was thinking about today as far as how to best protect your center. There's a lot more we can get into. We just spoke at CareNet last week about, you know, making sure you have good ultrasound training, making sure the medical practices are really high standard. Don't cut any corners. Employment is another big area, and we don't have enough time to go through all this here, but, you know, any kind of wrongful termination claim can really hurt the center. Making sure you're well insured, that your medical director is covered by your medical malpractice policy. Another thing we've been seeing is fake clients or adversarials filing medical board complaints against our medical providers. Make sure your medical malpractice insurance provides a defense to your doctor, your nurses for that, because that can cost a lot of money to defend them.
I know we covered a lot here, and thank you. I mean, my goodness, there's a lot there, but we still got time. So,
yeah,
I've got a question for you, Anne.
Yeah.
How often should a pregnancy clinic do a legal audit? And can you explain how that's a benefit or feature for NIFLA members?
Yeah. So, I would say at least every 5 years, or if something significant changes. And if the legal audit was done before you were the executive director, it's a good idea for you to do it because it's going to be so educational to you about how your center was formed and operates. And we always catch little things. Like I did a legal audit today for a center who I helped them convert to medical like 10 years ago. And I did a board training with them, the legal audit and everything. And they are doing so excellent, but I still found 4 pages worth to say, okay, we can improve here. You know, so I would say every 5 years or if there is a significant change. And with NIFLA, it's a membership benefit. It's like a 20-page questionnaire. I know it's very intimidating and calling it an audit is kind of scary, but it's really just, you know, a legal review. And it's Freedom, our members. I believe CareNet and Heartbeat do one as well. So make sure you take advantage of those things just to make sure you're doing things well.
Oh, so we have a question that says, you mentioned that the rules for website privacy policy differ by state, but do you have any recommendations on where it's located and how it can be, how they can find those answers per state?
We started doing legal research in all the states, and we have about 10 states, state-specific legal research that you can find on our website under the legal tips page. And one of the questions there is, does the state have a consumer privacy law that we have to comply with? Otherwise, I'm tasking the coalition leaders. This is an area it would really be great if the coalition got the information from. We're trying to do that in California. Of course, California has consumer protection policies, and we want to make sure laws, and we want to make sure to be complying with them. But it's not easy to figure out, which is frustrating. I would ask your provider. They might have it. There's definitely a standard. NIFLA in the basic policies and procedures has a template. But you would want to have a local attorney or check our state-specific legal thing, legal journals, and see if we figured it out yet. Or check with the coalition and see if someone in the coalition has figured it out yet. It's probably just tweaking some language in the website privacy policy.
In the meantime, we did have a question here. Please tell us what NIFLA is.
Oh, I'm sorry. I assume because I've been doing it 30 years. So I apologize. NIFLA stands for the National Institute of Family and Life Advocates. We're based in Virginia. Tom Glessner started 33 years ago. When he came out of CareNet, it was called Christian Action Council then, and just saw that pregnancy centers were being beat up right and left. And sometimes it was not because they didn't deserve it, you know? So there was a real need to like up the standards in the legal and the medical world. And so that's what we focus on. We don't compete with CareNet and Heartbeat. They've been around and they really, you know, do a great job focusing on what you do in the counseling room with the client, which us lawyers don't even ask us because we'll mess that up, you know? But NIFLA has 3 lawyers, 3 physicians, and a whole team trying to always produce and update best practices in the legal realm as well as in the medical realm. Oh, I remember what I was telling you. I was going to tell you, cyber attacks. They're starting to happen against pregnancy centers. So far, it's not like it's mean pro boards trying to do it, but I'm sure they're trying, right? But you need to have your privacy officer, which is usually your nurse manager, do a security risk assessment. And there's a form in the new policies we created that goes through everything at your center so you can see if you have any vulnerabilities. And I think in both cases that happened recently, it was phishing. You know how they send, you get emails sometimes and they're, it kind of looks real and you're worried about it. So you click the button and then it gives them entry into your system. So a good phishing training, anti-phishing training, phishing is P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G, would be really good for the staff. And I would say timely because it seems to be ramping up.
Yeah. So I was wondering, you said about updating like our bylaws and stuff to religious. So our ministry was set up like 36 years ago. So what agency is that, something to the IRS? Is that state? Oh. Where do we update that? And is there a difference from just being a nonprofit to like a religious nonprofit?
Oh.
And who do we follow?
Yeah, good question, Jared. So the Articles of Incorporation, which is the document you filed with the state to set up the organization, the nonprofit corporation, you would amend those and file an amended Articles of Incorporation with the state to add your religious purposes. Your main focus is still the same, you know, helping women choose life in a crisis pregnancy, but you're clarifying the religious part. Now, that's the only form you have to file with the state. There might be, like in California, there's a religious designation, so you might have to deal with that. You're not in California, right, Jared?
So no, I'm Maryland and West Virginia.
Okay. So we'd have to see if Maryland is very similar to California. So we'd have to see if there's a religious category that you could file. But in most states, it's just adding your religious purposes. You know, it says we're a 501c3 created for charitable, religious, educational purposes pursuant to IRS code section 501c3. That's the standard language. But then we want to beef it up to put in we're a Christ-based ministry, or we serve women all for the glory of God, and things like that. I knew when I said we should do fishing that we should do a fishing training. Someone just asked if we do. I'll put that on the list because I think it's very important. So maybe our next legal tips will be on it. And then you could use that webinar to train your staff on it. And then your bylaws is an internal document. You don't file that with the state. Your job descriptions, your statement of faith, all that is just internal. Your bylaws would need to be amended and be voted on by your board. But other than that, you don't have to file it with the state. What will happen is when you do your tax return for the next year, on the IRS 990, it asks, did you update any foundational documents for the organization? So you would check yes. And they don't even ask for a copy. They might come back and ask for a copy, but you don't have to provide a copy. You just have to notify them. They want to make sure the original mission that you were formed hasn't changed. Like, you know, you didn't form as a pregnancy center and then become a homeless shelter, you know, or, you know, immigration clinic or something like that, that your main mission is the same, which will be. But good question.
And does Missy have, with Learning is Created, don't they have some training on that?
I'm sure Missy does fishing.
I think
yeah, I've taken her training on that. And so I can definitely vouch for that.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
All right. Who else has a question? All right. Well, this was a lot of good information. If anyone has a question, feel free to interrupt and we'll be glad to address it. Thank you so much, Anne, for being on here. We'll be posting was that someone with a question? Sorry, I couldn't quite hear. Okay. We'll be posting a copy of this video. I'll be sending out a link. We'll put up a copy of this on the Pro-Life Team podcast, and we'll address if we should remove any pieces to make it ideal for that kind of sharing.
Yep,
and right. And yeah, thank you so much. This was really helpful. Thank you, Anne. Thank you for fighting for life and fighting on behalf of pregnancy clinics and just all of these amazing groups of heroes. And you're like the legal cog in our engine of, you know, in this pro-life space and sphere.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank the pregnancy centers because they're on the front lines and they're doing the hard work. And I just praise you and pray for you. Protection over you, especially in those states that are difficult, and just keep on keeping on because you're winning every day. God bless you.
Anne, would you close us out in prayer?
I'd love to. Dear Lord, we just thank you so much for the opportunities you give us to serve you. Whether it's, you know, from the legal training best practices position to the website and marketing position, so necessary, but especially for the pregnancy centers who are doing the really hard work and seeing these women day in, day out who are contemplating abortion. And we do everything we can, loving on them, showing them all the resources, and actually opening a window to the womb, and they see their baby. And sometimes they still choose abortion, Lord. And sometimes we're the only one that ever witnessed this, that child that you created in their womb. So it is a hard job. I pray that you protect the centers, not only from the enemies that we're constantly fighting, but from discouragement within, because it can be really hard. I just pray you uplift them daily, knowing that they are warriors on your team and that you're using them mightily, and that their reward is in heaven. Their crowns are going to be heavy with jewels, and they're going to see those babies in heaven too. So we lift them up. We thank you for the opportunity you always give us to serve. We thank you for the freedoms we still have in this country and for those that fight to protect them. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. All right. Thank you, everybody.
All right.
Thank you, Anne.
It makes me lie down in green. He leads me by quiet.